Okay, good evening, everyone. I like to do these every day if I can, but it's not always possible. So a day has been skipped, but we are on video commentary number 34 on the rules for magic on the astral plane. We're on page 343. This book has a lot of pages, and we're working with Rule 10. This is the 18th program dealing with Rule 10. So let's see where we are here. What has the Tibetan? The deliberate, concentrated effort, after having linked up with the Master, to work with pure dispassion and with no desire to see the fruit of action. I think that's difficult. I think many of us desire to see some sort of sign of real accomplishment in order to enthuse us to go on. But our vision of what is inevitable has to be so strong that even if we don't see it, we have to continue to work without reaction. And he says, pure dispassion. Remember, that relates particularly to the astral body. Discipline, physical dispassion, astral discrimination, mental decentralization, personal, and finally the overall detachment of the soul. So I would like to state, he says, that there are five things which those who choose the path of occultism need to cultivate, and that the group should seek especially to attain. Okay, so obviously there's much work to be done here. They are consecration of motive, so obviously the avoidance of what we call mixed motives, some high, some low. Our motives are high and in line with soul infusion and the expression of the divine plan. Here's another sort of Ray One approach, utter fearlessness, found, let's say, found at first in those who are upon the first ray. And what does he tell us about that? Truth through utter fearlessness. Fear is that recoil found in substance itself, and it prevents us from going forward and moving through the conditions, the environments through which we must pass. So we never confront that of which we are afraid. We just find ways of avoiding it, and that is not acceptable in the truly trained occultist. Get my pad here. The cultivation of the imagination balanced wisely by the reasoning faculty. So this will produce access to the intuition and creativity so that the divine plan may be impressed, seen, and executed on some small scale at first. Okay, so we cannot have a wild, overly active imagination. That is not acceptable, and will lead to bad work and into glamour, because basically, if things are exaggerated or minimized in the imagination, we are into the realm of distortion and of glamour. Right proportion is the key. Libra is so utterly important here because it holds things in right proportion. Number four, a capacity to weigh the evidence wisely. Boy, this is so Libra, isn't it? And to accept only that which is compatible with the highest instinct, that which is within us and already built in, and intuition. So, let's say a close examination and an accurate weighing, so that true values emerge. And, you know, we realize that for the initiate on the first degree, the preservation of values is what is desirable, what is characteristic. And then, of course, this Uranian factor the willingness to experiment, the Uranian factor, and hierarchy prize many different approaches until they find what really works. Now, this doesn't mean we throw the baby out with the bathwater. We do understand the tried and tested methods of the past, but until we experiment with new combinations, which Master Moria tells us is the characteristic of creativity, then, you know, we're not going to find those new ways which may lead to the archetype. You see, in a way, Uranus rules the archetype. The archetype is that which must be achieved. It is purpose. And we keep on putting together new combinations until we really do approximate the archetype. In this world of conditions which deviate extensively from the archetype, we need new impulses which will break down the conditions and create rearrangements of relationships which actually approximate at least what has to manifest in the lower worlds. No problem on the monadic realm or in the monadic realm or in the sea of fire. The archetypes are safe and they are sustained by the will of our Logos and by his mind and by his sense of coherence. They are sustained. They're not going to dissipate. They're not going to fall apart. But in this world of conditions, we're a long way from being able to achieve the right arrangement. Now, the seventh ray is the ray of right arrangement, and Uranus is a major seventh ray planet. So, you know, when you're looking for archetypes and original designs, which must be somehow expressed in these lower worlds, do look for Uranus in your chart, its sign, its aspects, and so forth, and what it might be able to bring through of the higher world. So, consecration of motive. Every occultist needs it. Okay, you know. I want to just kind of, you know, get these consecration of motive. Let's see if I try to say, will it allow me to? Utter fearlessness. Otherwise, we will not face those circumstances which must be overcome and gone through. Cultivation of the balanced imagination, well, the imagination balanced, because reason can be a check upon an overactive imagination. A capacity to weigh the evidence wisely. And a willingness to experiment. Now, let's just have a moment just for, I can maybe, you know, at times intersperse a few little reflections into this, you know, kind of class in a way. Just test yourself on these matters. Consecration of motive. Test your motive. What is your motive? You know, is there anything personal in it? Do you seek any kind of aggrandizement of the personality? How Fearless are you? Because it says utter, so it means under all circumstances. So there has to be a tremendous faith in the inner God, or the experience of the inner God surviving all circumstances. Sometimes, it's different things arouse fear in us, or question, make us question whether we would be fearful. And I think about those boys in the cave. How many days were they there in total darkness in Thailand? Was it 9 days? Total darkness. What would they have done without their sort of Buddhist teacher, who also led them into it, but probably helped them produce that state of mind? It's got to be totally life-changing. But did they give in to panic, or did they have the faith that they would be rescued? And it was a marvelous international coordination, this rescue. The cultivation of the imagination, but balanced with reason. How do you use your imagination? And do you let it run away with you, or is it insufficient? And do you wisely and logically look at what you have imagined? Well, Einstein said, I think, that imagination is greater than reason. He was a Pisces with Cancer rising, and, very powerful Neptune, I suppose, and what he did grasp in the mind of God and on the triadal level was intuitive, imaginative. He conducted thought experiments, which were in some ways very imaginative. Imagine riding a beam of light or something like that. So many people who admit that his theories are indeed true in most respects and very valuable wonder how in the world he ever came up with it. That was the big question. But, of course, access to the higher planes makes that possible. Are we fair-minded? Do we weigh the evidence wisely? And what do we accept as true? I know a lot of people whose desire to do something outweighs their rational faculties, because intuition would never sanction what they do. I mean, somewhere in the 30s it said that the masters would not be working sort of personal impression and that kind of thing. I don't know how long that would go on, and maybe people say, well, the time has passed and now the masters work that way again, but it's always the way, it doesn't relate to me, it relates to everybody else. So they think, that even though they're contacting some subconscious factor, for which he says 96% of the inspired writings emanate, from which 96% emanate, they think it's the voice of the master, the presence of the master, and so forth. But do they really weigh the evidence against what we know is sanctioned as truly from the hierarchy and from the master, or do they allow their profound wish to maybe be important to the master and be the messenger outweigh their reasoning capacity and everything that's built into them that might indicate the truth? It's a sad thing. And, when we get involved in that kind of thing, we wake up sadder but wiser one day. I remember a song by Schumann that I used to like to sing, and it was about two young people that set out on their life journey, and one did the conventional thing, and he married and had a family and all the rest of it, and the other, he listened to the sirens. I even get chills when I think about it. He listened to the sirens, and he followed the sirens, and he was lured to his sort of destruction of consciousness, and he was lured into the great glamour, but he did awake from it, and he did emerge from the waves, and he discovered that his life had passed chasing after things that were of no real value. And then the final, final statement in that poem is that, O God, lead us full of love to thee. Ach Gott, something liebreich zu dir. Zieht, I suppose. Lead us full of love to you. Instead of, you know, in these different kinds of paths where we never find God, which is our true self. And then again, you know, are we brave enough to experiment, or do we just go with the dogma? Well, we have to test ourselves. We have so many wonderful indications here in A Treatise on White Magic, but we must test ourselves. How truly do we as yet follow what the Tibetan indicates? He is the teacher, after all, for us. In this Aryan age, later Aryan age perhaps, and with respect to the Trans-Himalayan school, and with the sanction of his teacher and the Christ and Sanat Kumara, so, you know, it's really reliable. But if we just read, you know, and don't test ourselves to see how we're doing, well, it's not sufficient. So these five tendencies coupled with purity of life and regulation of thought will lead to the sphere of achievement. These are tendencies. And we, you know, they have to be part of our system, part of our approach. They must be. Okay, and now I probably have done something which takes me away from right, there we go. Remember too that it is not purpose that you should find out all the knowable. Well, you know, leave that to the planetary logos, but of course the planetary logos himself is just the tiniest of demonstrations. It's not purpose that you should find out all the knowable, but only just as much of it as may be employed wisely for the illumination of the race and of those whom you can, I suppose it means reach, in your own place. Those of you who can each, in your own place, influence. So, you know, there is such a thing. I well know it, you know, mental gluttony. And of course, it just feeds the lower ego and makes you feel proud, mental pride and all that. It's a thing that can affect third-ray people, second-ray people. I mean, if the second-ray people are more along the third-ray sub-line. So purity of life, the fire burns, and regulation of thought. So add to this, add to these five factors, add to these five factors, purity of life and regulation of thought. You know, the training in occultism is so arduous, and the question is, do we really want to get hold of our personality with our spiritual will and whip it into shape, as DK says. I wonder if I can find one of those whip it into shape statements. You know, I keep on saying he's a nice second-rate master. Why would he say that? Whip. Well, he's only got three. So maybe I should find it. Maybe. Oh, pain is the whip that drives the struggling soul. Okay, maybe that's not going to work for me, but I recall it, you know. Whip it. All right, let's see if that's it. No, whip up resentments, refuse to see your point of view. Well, anyway, or maybe it's whipping. You know how that goes. But I was astonished when I read it, and hopefully I did read it, you know, and reference imagine, but he did say whipping up. And coaxing and whipping were useless. Okay. Whipped into shape. Let's try that. Am I off on one of those horrible? Nope, there's nothing. Nothing there. Okay, or is there two P's? Yeah, it looks like it. Oh, here it is. But they have not yet. They've done a great deal of work, of the needed work of the inner contact, but they have not yet whipped the lower nature into shape. They are therefore unable to express that which they inwardly understand and somewhat realize. Okay, well, you can see how the gerund, the verb, and the past participle, one of them or other might be correct. He whipped himself to effort new. Well, that's the sort of sixth ray, fourth ray, driving himself forward when he doesn't find what he needs. That's the one, though. They have not yet whipped their personality into shape. And so it's the stinging lash of the soul, the sting. And of course, Scorpio carries that sting, and Scorpio expressed through the soul demands triumph. And there's more to it because our monadic expression is scorpionic on the Buddhic plane. We are a Scorpio hierarchy in many ways. So we have a tremendous fourth ray struggle. Well, okay. Go on. A real problem, as you all realize, lies in the achieving of utter fearlessness. All doubt, fear, and worry have to be eliminated. Well, it's tough for second ray types, I think. They tend to be very sensitive and they need to bring in something of the first ray to do this. Maybe they're sometimes equipped with first ray personalities for a while so that they can build that in. If this can be done, the development of the inner point of contact and the knowledge of how to tap the source of inspiration will increase in a wonderful manner. So, because fear causes recoil from that which is necessarily encountered. So he says, look, if you can eliminate all fear, doubt, and worry, fear, doubt, and worry, how much do these affect you? And maybe one affects you and not the other, you know. But they're all children of the same cause. So if we can eliminate these, then we will touch those high sources. Because there is this thing called the repression of the sublime, or is it the suppression of the sublime? Anyway, there's something in us that recoils from the light, even from high sources. Our lunar nature pulls back and trembles, and I think a Leadbeater says it turns into kind of like a gray gelatinous mass, not very attractive. So many close the sources of information through an uncontrolled emotional nature. The astral body can be controlled, but how? Okay, so obviously control the body of emotion. For the waves that rise upon the stormy seas of life engulf the swimmer, shut out the sun, and render all plans futile. Okay, so how to control We must. This whole book is somewhat given to the control of the astral body, but there's different ways of doing it, and some of them are more useful, or some are more harmful than others. By direct inhibition, just stop it, you know, stop feeling that way, stop reacting. This method can be used to advantage by beginners, but it is not the best method to follow. It reacts on the physical body, leading to congestion in the astral body and to a similar condition in the etheric body. It often produces headache, congestion of liver, and other disorders. You know, he speaks as a healer, and stopping the energy rather than transmuting it is simply an early expedient. Okay, now the next one. By a direct realization of the issues at stake and the consciousness that for the pupil of the master, nothing comes to pass but what can lead to increased knowledge and development and to greater usefulness and service. Nothing, everything, you know, can be used. All right, so this is another way, this conscious realization. Direct realization of the issues involved. Out of the way, okay. Fear with many is not based on timidity, a paradoxical statement, but is often based on a mental condition such as pride. Those who are becoming polarized in the mental body, gradually, between the second and third it happens, find their fears allied to the intellect. They are therefore harder to overcome than the fears of the person polarized in the astral body. The latter can bring the intellect to bear on the elimination of fear in the astral body. The mental types have to call directly on the ego, for always the higher must deal, called in to deal with the lower. That is really a principle. So if we have some sort of, what could it be, mental fear allied to the intellect. You know, again, the lower ego seems to be involved. The reticence to give up certain points of view, having achieved certain things intellectually which must be relinquished and changed entirely. A paradigm shift going on within the individual can cause a lot of fear of abandoning what you thought was correct for something that you're not quite sure about. Hence the necessity for always keeping the channel clear, you know, to reach the higher ego. Do not crush out fear. Force it out by the dynamic power of substitution. Well, there we go. And Alice Bailey has certainly recommended this, but boy, this is a big one, and you know, in as a result, I'll make it really big. Do not crush out fear. I mean, I suppose in absolute do or die moments, you just have to get rid of the fear and plunge in. Okay, maybe that's called crushing out, but in general, do not crush out fear. Force it out by the dynamic power of substitution. And let's just say different energies and different thoughts which are contrary to the fear. Well, what does Patanjali say? When thoughts contrary to yoga arise, produce thoughts that are contrary to the contrary thoughts. And so this leads to my third suggestion, that students in the group should cure the fear habit. Wow. Look at that statement. Cure the fear habit. That's pretty funny. Okay. Well, that made it smaller rather than larger, but okay. And it's got the wrong. Okay. Cure the fear habit. by a direct method of relaxed concentration, stilling, stillness, and a flushing the entire personality with pure white light. I mean, sometimes when we're doing the triangles work and we're looking at the master and the ego or solar angel, he tells us that light orange color is what to use, but here it's the pure white light, which is, and here it gets intensely practical. Because, you know, there are times when we are going to encounter fear, definitely, because we're not purified yet. And, okay, we have to remember his methods. So now comes really a section which is most interesting about the conquest of fear. You are, we will say, in a state of panic. Suggestions of great unpleasantness are crowding in. Your imagination is running riot, and your mind enforces the riot because, you know, it does seem mentally, it seems, you know, mentally, it seems possible that indeed these things will take place. Forget not that the fears of an emotional person are not so potent as yours. Having a strong mental body, you clothe your fear reactions with mental matter, highly vitalized, which causes a powerful thought form to be created. This is one of the most practical areas, I think, in the whole book. This circulates between you and the feared event. Realizing this, now here's the method. The following is the method. Realizing this, you will proceed to seek quietness. You will relax your physical body, endeavor to quiet your astral body as far as may be, and to steady the mind. Then visualizing yourself, the personality, in this case, well, it's not really ourself, but, you know, for practical purposes, that's how we often think of ourselves. Visualizing yourself, the personality, the soul, and the master, he as the apex of the triangle, you will, with deliberation, call down a stream of pure white light, what from the master, from the soul, and pouring it through your lower vehicles, you will cleanse all that hinders. Continue this process until you realize that the needed work is accomplished. At first, you may have to do it many times. Later, just once will suffice. And later still, the whole process will be needless, for you will have achieved conquest. Wow. Okay, so, you know, this is the method for this first kind of fear. He does deal with other and maybe more grave types of fear, but this is the first one. Quietness, relaxing the physical body, quieting the astral body, steadying the mind, visualizing ourselves as the personality, then the soul, then the master, and it's a triangle here. I don't know what kind of triangle we can create. Is the soul and the soul and the personality on the same level? Maybe not. Well, sometimes, you know, let's take a look here. You know, we're going to File Explorer, and here, if I can, whoop, give me a break here. This is a, all right, AAB diagrams and chart number 8 will show us something there. You see how the triangle looks here. Well, maybe that's a way we could build a triangle instead of putting the soul and the personality on the same level, and then putting the master at the top. So it would not be this kind of sort of equilateral triangle. It would be a different kind of triangle, which shows the relative status of each one of the points of the triangle. Now, while I'm at it, I think I might as well get Tuya's thing here, because, you know, tends to be more colorful and more interesting. Okay, I think Let's see, I'll do it this way. There, that's a good one. All right, but the same triangle is there. This is the spiritual triad, of course, but we can use that triangle if we will. All right, so that's how we deal with the first type of fear. Things are thoughts are pouring in, and your respiration is increasing, your heart rate is increasing, and all that. Just find a way to quiet all that and bring in the pure white light coming from the higher levels, and we can imagine it coming from soul levels. All right, this applies to the fears connected with the personality. You use the love aspect, flooding yourself with love and light. Okay. Clear enough. Clear enough. But the legitimate fears which arise from things connected with the circumstances of the work to be done, from the knowledge of the materialized obstructions to the work, must be treated somewhat differently, and here is the method. This is the second approach to fear, because maybe there are things really in the environment which are preventing the work from being done as best it could be done. So a different method. So this is let's see, method for second type of fear, more legitimate and involving real opposition on the physical plane. Still the physical body, quiet by temporary inhibition, the astral body, link up with the ego. Let's just say the consciousness within the causal body, which is a combination of solar angelic consciousness and maybe our own higher consciousness, link up with the ego and definitely reason out the proper method of procedure in meeting the difficulty. The mind is engaged, and having exhausted all the higher rational methods and having clearly seen your course of action, you then raise your vibration as high as may be and call down from intuitional levels added light on the difficulty. So here, we're not only, oops, why is that coming? Call down from intuitional levels. We're touching, like the Buddhic plane here, trying to added light. It's not simply the light of the soul. It doesn't tell us what color to use or whether it's white or whether no color at all is involved. If your intuition and reasoning faculties produce harmony and thus show the way out, then proceed. As an occult fact, past all controversy, you know that naught can now happen but what is for the best. That is, if you do in fact touch the intuition, you are sure of guidance. And he who sees thus the end from the beginning makes no error, because the intuition does reveal the end from the beginning. So it seems to me that we have to somehow make note of this. Make note of this. And second method, these are real concretized obstacles. Sometimes there may not be enough money to continue the work. This actually affected Alice Bailey and her group during the Second World War. Just imagine, she's working with a master, and she's just short of materials and money. A method had to be found, So maybe the intuition revealed that method, because they did keep going. And I imagine that they couldn't have kept going unless there were sacrifices. Usually, sacrifice clears the way. Now, here's another one, the third class of fears. And just for a moment, before we get into that, just think about the other class of fears that we just dealt with. These are things materialized on the physical plane, which actually do obstruct and legitimate action. Where I mean, it's not just what might happen, it's this actually has happened. These are materialized obstructions to the work. Really, they have happened. Have you encountered such a thing? Are you encountering that right now? Maybe issues of health, money, enemies, forces ranged against. Well, speaking of forces ranged against and cult forces, let's go on to the next one because anyway, meditate on that and just see if you give in to these things. The third class of fears, which aspirants contact more and more as they grow in strength and usefulness in service, is based on the realization of the forces that are working against the plan and hindering the work to be done. Well, these are the forces, so-called, of obstruction. The forces of obstruction. They do exist, and they're very subtle, and maybe a lot of their power is that they're not realized. You don't see when they strike. They ambush you. Maybe some of us have been ambushed, but you get more and more vigilant, as Master Maurya says. And what was it? Was George Bush saying something like, well, something like, attack me once or stop me once, shame on you. And attack me twice, shame on me. And the word is not attack, but it's like that. Obstruct me, Because after all, those you should have gained in vigilance. Master Maurya said he was so vigilant in his lives that he was very rarely killed by his enemies. And I suppose, you find them as much in court as you do out there from other countries and other societies and on the battlefield. Occult attacks and occult powers warring militantly against the aspirants will occur. They may make their power felt in one or other of the vehicles and, in rare cases, where the aspirant is important enough, on all at once. Okay. Well, you know how easy it is to fall into glamour about these things. Rather ordinary things happen, and people say, oh, I've been attacked occultly. But nevertheless, they are realities. They are a third class of event which inspires fear. Cult attacks and occult powers, not the benevolent kind, right? Warring militantly. There's our Mars. Are Pluto for subterfuge. They do come in under Scorpio very much and sometimes under Capricorn. Obstruction, right? The forces of obstruction. Warring militantly against the aspirant, even an aspirant, will occur. They make their power felt in one or other of the vehicles and in rare cases where the aspirant is important enough on all at once. Sometimes they will be attacks directed against the individual worker and sometimes against the groups of workers. And that's even, against, whoops, sorry. So we might say against the group is more important. I'm recalling that DK said, look, I had to take some time out. There's been an attack on my ashram. I had to do some repair work, something like that. He had to counter this attack. And I suppose it was coming through some of his students who were going off on the astral plane and thinking that they were contacting the real hierarchy. This happened in a few cases. The thought form of the Tibetan was masquerading as him, so that took in IBS and it took in LTSK. Then there was another one, BSD, was it BSD or... Anyway, it was a man whose rays were 17467. He was involved. Beauty, strength. Ah, oh, that's it. Yeah. So it was BSD, I think. He was contacting astral shells because he used to do it when he was a monk, and those were the old days, and he was bored in his monastic life, and he went out on the astral plane and contacted sort of spurious sources, and he carried these things forward, and DK eventually had to let him go. You know, he couldn't go on anymore with the group. So there's a lot of traps on the astral plane, and they are ever so convincing, and they get associated with our ego, and we start to feel a little bit, you know, proud or special because we've been able to contact them. And they're just spurious. They're not real. And they slow us down. Anyway, DK had to do some remedial work, repair work, whatever. And two of his students were in pretty big danger on the basis of their contact with that thought form of him that was offering good words of mediocre cheer, something like that. So anyway, these occult attacks, to counter them, you employ the first method with the following additions and changes. You link yourself up either as an individual or forming one of a group with your own soul and with the lodge of masters, not simply your own master, but with the brotherhood for which you are working. See, it's you're really calling in the powers here. Then when stillness has been achieved, you have to relax the physical body and, you know, as much as you can, the astral body, focus the mind, held steady in the light of the soul. We have the presence of the soul as you imagine it, and the presence of, it's a triangle, and the presence of the lodge of masters, the hierarchy. Then when stillness has been achieved, you visualize those masters of whom you know, and raise your vibration still higher. Raising your vibration still higher, you connect up, if possible, with the Chohans, with the Christ and the Manu. I suppose with the great hierarchical triangle of Christ, Manu, and Mahachohan, according to the line, religious or political, with which you may be working. So especially emphasize, you know, if it's in education and all the redemptive aspects, it's the Christ. If it's politics and the racial form, it's the Manu. If it's civilization, it's the Mahachohan. So then you link up with these very high sources with which you may be working and along which the attack will come, because it will come along the attack, it will come along the line on which you are making your greatest contribution. You then pour through the linking chain and through all the vehicles a stream of violet light. Wow. And this method is used... it's not letting me save, huh? I'm hoping it's letting me save. And I'll be able to tell by the time. Yep. Okay. So you bring in the vivid light, and this method is only for use when the need is dire and the necessity great, and probably most of us are not in the position to actually be able to assess that. The reason for caution lies in the etheric vehicle, which responds most violently, not just violently, but most violently, to the color violet. Okay. So let's make this an important one, and the violet light even more important. Now just, you know, make it the usual color. But when it comes to the word violet, if I can find it, I will make that violet, violetish. Okay. So, personal fears, they may have nothing to do with reality. Then the second were dealing with materialized obstructive circumstances, which are real. I mean, they're actual anyway. And they are preventing. And on the physical plane, and have a very real possibility of preventing the work because they actually have materialized. And then the third is occult attacks. You know, but we go back here to number one, and we'll call this first class of fears. See quietness, physical body, astral body, quiet, steady the mind, your personality, the soul, and the master, and he's the apex. Even though the master, you know, compared to the solar angel as a grand entirety, is not the equal. I mean, we know the story that the master seeks to be a member of the Council of Shambhala, and in most cases is not yet until he's a Chohan, except for maybe some first-ray masters. And then the solar angel is already, or the solar Petri, as DK refers to it, is already a member of the council within the sun. That's an entirely higher order of membership. Nevertheless, the master is the apex, probably, well, for whatever reason. Maybe because our intimacy with the master is considerable. And there is a projection, of course, of the solar angel into our causal body. I don't think, and as I've said many times before, I don't think we could contain the entirety of the solar angel and its power within our causal body. I don't think so. This is a very high initiate that has been to the star system of Sirius, apparently. And probably on the cosmic astral plane, I suspect, although it's not given in terms of the previous solar system when that journey was made, but I suspect so. And then if you think about that being falling into the cosmic ethers and falling yet again onto the higher mental plane, it's got to be some kind of regulated, transformed projection of its total power, which underlies the development of the human being, and which helps to build and sustain the vehicle of the human being. Because after all, the solar angel, we are told, does have its own tasks to fulfill, and that we shouldn't always be importuning it, because it does have its own requirements on the level in which it's found. And one of the maps, anyway, whether that map is from DK or whether he approved it, we have something showing the solar angel here on the Buddhic plane. Solar angels, Agnishvatas, Buddhic. So I think, you know, DK approved this. I'm not sure he made it per se. I have the feeling it was sort of assembled. And then, what leads me to think that? I think I read it somewhere. In any case, if it was not accurate, it would not be in the book. So it's in esoteric astrology, and it's also in a treatise on cosmic fire. So let's see here, just a little more before our program is over. With these precautions in mind, the fear of vibration can be faced and eventually eliminated. Now notice this word. Notice this word. Faced. That means, you know, faced up to and not running away from. Uh-oh, the disc is full. It's full, trying to write to D. Okay. Okay, so let's see if I get this. I'm going to have to treat my disc with care because it's just filling up and that won't do, will it? So let's see how bad it is. Oh, well, it's getting there. And, okay, not quite, but full enough to be problematic. So I'll take care of that right away. All right, so fears fall into two general categories for the worker: fear of what the future holds, and secondly, doubt as to the outcome of the effort. Now, we've been dealing with earlier with some of these fear vibrations. Fear of the future, fear of failure, you know, that would be a doubt as to how it will all work out. With most people, it is a combination of the two. Most aspirants have no basic doubt as to the ultimate issue, but they do doubt at times the working out of those issues in the present time. And they shrink back. Notice that those words, shrink back, which is the recoil I've been talking about. Also, from the path of endeavor, knowing and rightly knowing that it leads through trial and loneliness to the feet of the Hierophant. They know that. They are likewise distressed by troubles and high vibrations which seem to emanate from high spiritual sources, because these can certainly cause frictions. They are likewise, yes, strong vibrations will come with ever-increasing frequency. And as the race progresses in evolution, the vibrations will wax stronger and their reactions must be dealt with wisdom. I mean, when Uranus comes in and you're trying to rearrange Saturn, it is difficult. Okay. Well, I think, you know, Tui and I have a program we have to give, and I think we're on page 347, and there's no way, really, for me to go on as much as I would like to at this moment. But we're really dealing, you know, with the issues. You can see. 347, okay. Consecrate your motive, be fearless, cultivate the balanced imagination, weigh the evidence, experiment. How do you deal with the astral body? Direct inhibition. Apply your consciousness mentally. And then, of course, the method of flushing with pure white light. And then the different kinds of fears, personal fears, fears regarding materialized opposition, and then the occult attacks. So that's what we've been dealing with here. I know I've expanded all of this, but so strong vibrations are always coming. So let's put this here and we'll change the number. This is number 34, and our day today is the 27th of August. And we're dealing with 343 to 347. So we're going to start with number 35, the 35th program, in dealing with the rules for magic on the astral plane. We're still in rule 10, and it's the 19th program for rule 10. very, very big rule. So that should do it, friends. Wonderful book. I've been, you know, maybe taking a little more leisurely approach. Sometimes I realize I talk too fast, maybe sometimes too slow, I don't know. But, you know, we're thinking together about these things, giving you a little time for reflection, giving me time for reflection, because there's no real assimilation without reflection. We can read a thing, but it has to sink in and it has to be applied, it has to be attempted. The application has to be attempted. And as DK said somewhere in this, he said, look, you can't learn everything, but try especially to learn that which is of use to you in the present circumstances and which you can apply. Okay, thank you. And many blessings, lots of love, and that's what we need. And we'll just go on to the next opportunity to read here. I guess we've done more than half the book, I'm hoping. I'm thinking we have. But so far there are 84 programs, so I imagine we're going to be up in the 170s or 180s by the time we finish. Plenty to study, and this is a book which really must be studied by all of us. Indeed. See you later. See you soon.